What is up, conscious monkeys? Welcome back to another episode of Traveling to Consciousness. And as always, I'm your host, Clay Nkateri. But as we get into this, I will not be your host anymore. I'm going to turn it over to Anna, because in today's podcast, I'm the one being interviewed. I had this organization reach out to me called The World of Awakening. You can check them out at worldofawakening.com. They're essentially a retreat center, and they do mindfulness courses. They help people with their spirituality to get in depth. And they wanted to collab and do something. And so what we agreed upon and thought was best for both of us was to have one of their amazing teachers, Anna, interview me on my podcast. Because as you guys know, I'm running for Congress, and this is very much a spiritual journey, yes, but also a spiritual movement. We need more spirituality in our politics. We need people who are connected to nature, who are connected to source, who are connected to spirit, who are connected to God in politics, because as you can see, a lot of damage has been done to the earth, a lot of damage has been done to society because of people who are not looking for the advancement, for the upgrade of society. The upgrade that they currently see in politics is the one of destruction, the one where we have technology come in and fix everything. But in reality, we need to move back into connection with nature, because she has all of the answers that we are looking for and so much more. So with that being said, I am being interviewed by a beautiful lady named Anna Sokol. I apologize if I pronounced that wrong. And she asked me from a spiritual perspective of why get into politics, what's the purpose. And so I talk a little bit about my journey, which I'm sure you guys have heard, but if not, this will be a nice refresher. We talk about what's my motivation getting into politics, the issues that we have within politics, and essentially my vision, American Congress Party's vision for global unity and how that's actually possible. Because global peace is possible in our lifetime. We just have to actively choose that. And we also need people getting into it. So if you're spiritual, get into it. We need other spiritual people joining the party, campaigning, running for elections, all of that stuff. So if that sounds like you, find a way to reach out to me at Clayton Cuteri on every social media platform and let me know. We'll get you involved. We'll talk. We'll see how you can help, because I can't do this alone. We are all in this together. So if you truly want peace on earth, reach out. If you feel like that's the ultimate goal in life, because that's, I don't know, I guess that's my ultimate goal in life. I'm not sure why else. Let me put it this way. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. I'm not sure what else to do this for, right? You look around and so much of this world is quote unquote dying, and it could all be so easily prevented, but it doesn't seem to me that people want to prevent it. So with that being said, I really hope you enjoy this interview. Anna does an incredible job. And so, yeah, with that being said, Anna, I'll let you take it away.
Traveling to Consciousness. Exploring spiritual journeys to find answers in uncertainty.
Welcome, welcome to the interview. So today we have a very special podcast, I guess. At this time you being interviewed, not as usual. Hello, Clayton.
Yeah, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, thank you so much for accepting my request to do this interview. I'm very excited for today's topic. I see it being like big controversy of two terms, politics and spirituality, coming together in today's interview. To begin with, I would like to ask you a few words about how actually did you get into spirituality, because initially your podcast, as I saw, was about quantum psychology, quantum coaching, and now you're in politics. So can you please share a little bit, how did you end up doing this?
Absolutely. So from a high level, because there are so many profound details of this, so from a high level, I was in a relationship with a girl and everything was perfect. And then one day everything kind of just seemed to fall apart and I couldn't figure out why. I had some intuition of why it was falling apart, and I didn't really know though. It was kind of weird. It was kind of strange. a bunch of words along the lines of like trauma and whatnot kept getting thrown at me. But I grew up in a relatively decent environment. You know, society tells you you're a white male, everything should be good, there's no problems. But if I wasn't able to figure out relationships, then what, you know, something's wrong. So about a couple weeks after this relationship spun out, I did a psilocybin therapy session, which if those of you who don't know, it's magic mushrooms. And it helped open up my mind to just a new reality, if you will, because I was very logically minded. I was very scientifically based. I was a software engineer. I guess I still am a software engineer. And so doing this psilocybin trip, I was facilitated and guided. So not advocating drug use, but if you're going to do it, make sure it's in a controlled environment. Set and setting is very important. And I was shown sexual trauma that I experienced whenever I was younger and didn't realize that it was completely warping my reality of what it meant to love somebody, or like, what's the difference between loving, you know, your mom versus loving a girlfriend versus loving, you know, your favorite sports team versus loving your country. To me, it all seemed very confusing. So flash forward a few years, and maybe about a year and a half after that, I did another psilocybin therapy session because I was just in my job. I was just not enjoying life. It was awful. It was rough. And it was a very lucrative job. I was creating state-of-the-art military code for drones, for military drones. I lived in San Diego. I had two beaches within a 30-second walk of my house. Life was beautiful. And something fell off. Doing the therapy session, I can only say what I believe to be the voice of God, the voice of nature, the voice of source, which told me to do what I feared most. And in that instant, it was quitting my job without a plan, starting a podcast and traveling the world. So I had some money saved up. Of course, everyone wants more money than it, but you know, I figured out that it was like, okay, I'll figure it out as I go along, which hindsight, I don't recommend to people. I think it's good to always have a plan. And hopefully I can at least be an advocate to make sure you plan stuff like this out. But in my journey, I just quit my job without a plan. I lived in Brazil for about 2 months and I started my podcast. And I wasn't really sure what to do with my podcast. So starting off, I just talked to friends of mine for a long form, but quickly realized that I gravitated towards spirituality, spiritual nature of things, plant medicine, people talking about astrology, people talking about angels, people talking about astral projection, Akashic readings, dream interpretation. And so it got to a point where I just started diving into that. I just started researching it, having people on, influencers on my podcast, and learning what they had to say about the spirituality space. And it blew my mind. And of course, some things made sense, some things didn't make sense. And over time, I kind of had a very interesting spiritual journey of kind of, let's say, coming back to Jesus moment, if you will, where, and I don't mean that, I guess, in the sense people normally think of it, but re-seeing how his teachings were taught and understanding them at a deeper level. Because I think that there's a lot of depth to his words and teachings that get overlooked or they're misconstrued in today's society. But big picture, I basically kept pursuing that path, kept pursuing that path, kept getting more in depth with who I was, more in touch with my pure nature of who I am, and meeting the people along the way who have guided me. I have an incredible guru now who I visited in India for about a month. And through his advice, through connecting with nature, through deeper meditation, the path opened up to me that I needed to get into politics. Because, and it scared me. I'll be honest, it really scared me because a lot of the spiritual programming, as you kind of alluded to here, is that spiritual people shouldn't be in politics. You know, you look at majority of the saints and they didn't really do anything with their life. They renounced the material world. This is like the monks and we see them as so spiritual. But help with the help of my guru, with the help of nature, I've come to realize that it's bad programming. And there's a lot of bad programming on this earth, but one of the bad programming is that spiritual people shouldn't have power. And I see that as not as being further from the truth. I think people who are connected to themselves at a higher level These are the people who we need making laws and making policy decisions that will drive us into the next stage of our evolution as humanity. Because that's really what we're on the brink of here is you can see the people who aren't spiritual, the people who aren't putting Mother Nature at the top of the realm, they're the ones in power and they're the ones in control of nuclear weapons. And I mean, look at the amount of devastation and harm they're causing to innocent people across the entire world. And so we need people in power who actually care about innocent people, who see them as being as valuable as myself or as valuable as you. And so this, amongst many other things, you know, we could get into how they're polluting our water, how they're polluting our air, how they're polluting our soil. And so it's really returning power to the people, because we've been so disempowered from our education system to the food that we're putting in our bodies. I'm not sure. In Europe, it's probably not as bad, but in America, it's horrendous how they've destroyed the soil and there's no nutrients in the food. And I think that's a huge cause to our obesity issue. I think people, our IQs are dropping because of it and so much more. But just from, I guess that was a little in depth, but from a high level, that's kind of my journey through spirituality and how it led me to politics.
That's very interesting. Few things that you mentioned. First of all, is that I'm myself for a healthy approach to spirituality, but I know that for people who are very analytical and in the mind, perhaps some psychedelic experience with the power plant, for example, could be a good start just to break the concept of that there is nothing more but materialism. And that's what opened up a path to you. So it's interesting to see that that happens to quite many people as we go. And then you actually started to do the path consciously. Now you don't use any other substances. You just go through the teaching, right? Through your guru.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since November, I've been completely sober since November. And I mean, I guess caffeine every now and then, but even that I'm starting to phase out. So that's a whole nother conversation as well.
And how long has it been since the beginning of your particular, that first psychedelic experience till now?
Well, my first psychedelic experience was a long time ago. But let's say using it in a controlled fashion, using it with intention of healing and respecting it for what it is. That was, I think, at the end of 2020 or 2021, 2020, I think, end of 2020. So we're about 3.5 years to my, you know, consciously pursuing a spiritual life.
Yeah. And how do you enjoy it so far? Do you see a longer perspective, like ultimate goal for you personally in this spiritual path?
That's a great question. Yes. Yes. I can see a lot. And one thing that's coming to me is I think that people, when they get into the spiritual nature of things, is they think it makes life easier. But what I've noticed is the more spiritual you become, the more difficult. Fun, yes, but more you got to do, the more responsible you need to become, the more weight you need to put on your own shoulders, because you are here to be a leader. You're here to lead other people out of darkness and into alignment, into becoming balanced, not just being dark. Dark's important, which is another topic that can go in depth, but becoming balanced between light and dark and understanding when it's time for the sun and when it's time for the moon. And it's difficult, but it becomes more fun. And I'm losing my train of thought of what the original question was. Can you put me back on track?
Your ultimate goal personally with spiritual path.
So, I mean, the end goal, right, is peace on earth. The end goal of all of this is to create peace on earth. And it'll take some time, but I'm hoping that this is something that really could be accomplished within 15 to 20 years. I'm hoping it's sooner than that, but if I'm being a pessimist, I would say about 20 years. And the process of this happening is in depth and there's a lot of components to it, but big picture, you need people in power who don't have a mindset of killing innocent people, who don't have a mindset of division, realizing that we're innocent people. The best way I can highlight this is if you look at the narrative that's kind of going around online, you you get pinched into, okay, are we on the Palestinian side or are we on the Israeli side? Are we on Russia's side or are we on the Ukrainian side? Whose side do you pick? And something about that always never sat right with me. And the reason is because the honest truth is that I myself, and hopefully as many people as we can, are on the side of the innocent people. Because whenever the dust settles, nothing's going to happen to the leaders of these countries. They're going to still be in their ivory towers. They're still going to have family members who are alive and well. And the outcome will be in the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. And then including those deaths, now they have to rebuild all of the destruction that was just carried out. And what's it in the name of? Sometimes it's in the name of a border. Sometimes it's them having a dispute between each other, but it's silly nonsense. And, you know, the next question I think becomes is like, how do you actually pull this off? Well, you know, there's many answers to that, but one of the big ones is having responsibility. So anytime someone in politics makes a mistake, there's no responsibility. We experienced this in America many times. One of the ones was the testimony that there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that led us into a war that got 900,000 people killed and trillions of dollars spent in a needless war that we ended up just giving the entire Afghanistan back to the Taliban after 4 years, $6 trillion and 900,000 deaths. And so there's no accountability for that. Everything just keeps moving along. And a big reason there's no accountability for that is because there's nobody in a position of power to hold people accountable. So there are laws already on the book, and I'm not saying we do anything illegal because there's no reason for that. There are laws on the books. For example, the 1949 Geneva Convention, what classifies a war crime? If we want to just look at the current situation in Palestine and Israel, both sides have already committed war crimes. You know, Hamas started off by doing what they did, the horrendous, you know, raping and killing of women and children in Israel. That's a war crime. And then Israel, not doing anything better than invades the Gaza Strip and carries out atrocious massacres of the, you know, tens of thousands, it seems. Who knows the exact number, because, you know, the media decides to skew these however makes them feel good. So both sides have committed war crimes and nobody is stepping up to the plate and saying, hey, yeah, we actually need to prosecute these people for war crimes. We need to hold these leaders accountable. And until we do that, there is not going to be any change. So, you know, end goal is world peace. Is it possible? Yes. Is there a way to do it? Yes. And right now we're at the stage of just bringing awareness to people. And so that's why I'm honored that you invited me on to have this interview and this discussion, because I think more people need to have ideas that can take us into that next stage, as opposed to ideas that are separating and dividing us, and realizing that we need to stand together in solidarity and unity. And that's what's going to bring balance and harmony back to the world.
So nice to hear such thinking and such vision, and to have it generally as an option, because when you share it, it also expands perception for some people that may only have idea that of that government is against them, or that politics will always earn money on people or make better for the system and for corruption, but not for anything that actually serves humans. And this reminded me of one perspective that recently I heard about, that we are entering new age time. And if we look at society and just normal people, general people, previously being located, let's say, at the lowest chakra, like at the survival kind of mode, then politicians and government having the right to keep everything in order, and then spiritual people being at the heart area, so to say, yeah, so staying in the heart. That's how it was in the previous time. And now the whole system is kind of shifting higher, so to say. I really like this analogy, because what happens is that ordinary people, every single person, begins to actually come to responsibility, own responsibility of that. What can I create in my space to keep it in order and to create better future for my kids, for my environment, for my friends, and so on? Then politicians shift into heart area. So they have to pick choices that are not logical, maybe from some beneficial, like, you know, consumption perspective, but more from the heart level and human to human connection. And spiritual people coming into the throat chakra, or the manifestation, or the outspoken chakra. So they begin to show on social media more. This is becoming trend, general trend, mass media trend, to be more aware, to develop those soft skills, to look into that direction. And it's really great to see this actually happening physically right now, with you being example of going into politics with such ideas. So my next question would be, is actually about how exactly are you planning to do the changes through politics? Are you seeing particular spheres of life that could be improved in certain way, or what can change the system? Is it even possible, because the system is already so, like, massive and strong, and it's going fast way forward? So yeah, what ideas do you have on that?
Well, where I'm at right now is just spreading awareness that these ideas exist, right? Number one. And number two is getting spiritual people into politics, because I can't change the world myself. It's going to take a whole team effort. And so we do need more people. It's not going to just be Clayton Kateri, and honestly, that sounds overwhelming. Clayton Kateri is going to be the one that brings world peace. It's like, I need a whole team, right? So, you know, whether it's, even if you're in whatever country you're in listening to this, join, I mean, you're a spiritual person, see if there's any politics that political organizations, or, you know, parties that align with our philosophies, which I'll get into in a second here. But, and you can also see more at AmericanCongressParty.com. But, you know, get into politics, and if they don't exist, start them, because this is what we need if we're going to bring ourselves into that next wave of enlightenment as an entire species. And I think this is also the thing of, you know, you fix yourself first before you can change the world. And so I've found a level of peace, and I'm always looking for deeper peace and deeper calmness. But I found a level of peace and calmness where I'm ready to share that, and I'm ready to expand that outward. And so it's given me the confidence to move forward with politics, with these things. Now to move in kind of like into the policies of, like, well, what are we going to even go for, right? Like, what's the end goal? So you mentioned the chakras, which we could dive into for a little bit, right? Some of the lowest ones are survival. I think that's the root chakra, is all about survival. If you can't survive, you can't think. There's nothing else that's important to you. There's a book called Red Famine that talks about this as well, which was when Stalin in, Soviet Russia, where their whole goal was just to starve their population. Because basically, when you have a starved population, they'll listen to whatever you say. They're currently doing the same thing in North Korea, which holds them in, they get control over their people. So what you see happening in America is very similar. You have the likes of China and Bill Gates, who are buying up majority of the farmland in America. You have policies that are being placed for us that you have to spray pesticides, you have to spray chemicals on your food, otherwise they get shut down. So there's a very, very famous case right now happening in Pennsylvania, actually, the state that I'm running in, for Amos Miller farm. He's a private farm. He does his own thing. He has a private community of about 4,000 people who he provides food to. And no one has ever gotten sick from his stuff, but the FDA came in and shut down all of his food. They basically took it all. They're prosecuting him. And there's 4,000 people that he's been feeding for years, and no one has ever had an issue with any of the food. So why are they prosecuting him? Well, again, this is where it starts at the top. At the top, they're saying, hey, you have to spray pesticides on your food. You have to destroy the land. You have to malnourish the soil, and then you feed it to people. And for some reason, they think that this is what makes people healthy, and it doesn't. And it's a perfect example of how we're poisoning our soil through policy, through government. It starts at the government level, where they say you have to poison your food, and then you can sell it to people. And the reality is it's making us sicker. It's making us less intelligent. It's causing inflammation. And this is a part of this is where then Big Pharma comes in, is you make the population sick, and then you also own the people who treat all those symptoms. So now we're basically eating food without any nutrition, and then we're told to take pills and different chemicals in those rites that will then supposed to heal us. Well, if you look back before what's called the Flexner Report, and this is a lot of American history, so I'm not sure how brushed up you are on it, but essentially back in the early 1900s or late 1800s, there is a guy named, I'm forgetting his name. It starts with an R, a Rothschild, I believe. I believe it was one of the Rothschilds. And something feels off about that. But basically, he commissioned a Flexner Report. And the whole goal was to figure out how to subvert people away from trusting herbalists, from trusting chiropractors, to create a new wave of medicine. So he was an oil tycoon, and basically the government broke up his oil tycoon because he was becoming a monopoly. They broke it up, and he had all this petroleum on his hand. So he said, how do we synthesize plants, nature, into chemicals so then we can patent it and sell it back to people? So I'm trying to remember what a common one is, but if you had a plant for sleep, for instance, scientists went in, figured out what chemical compound it was that made people tired. They synthesized it and then packaged it in a pill and sold it back to people. And nowadays, I'm sure you're familiar with the term alternative medicine, which is hilarious because this was a byproduct of the Flexner Report. So they labeled alternative medicine as like herbalists and people who would say like, yeah, if you mix, you know, let's say, and this is a complete hypothetical off the top of my head, like grass root with turmeric and then mix it with milk and ingest that, it's going to heal this and this. And so they've labeled that as, you know, taboo. They've done a huge marketing campaign to label that as alternative medicine. In reality, this is nature's medicine. This is the most prosperous and healing with lack of symptoms that we could possibly find. And yet we somehow have some sort of belief system that scientists have figured out a way to outsmart nature, which is hilarious whenever you truly think about it. So what can we do, right? There's a lot that we can do. And a lot of it is, in fact, legalizing nature, allowing farmers to grow plants and have regenerative farming practices. Another big issue that we have, and I just had someone on my podcast who was a rancher, who talked about what he calls CAFOs, which are basically whenever they put cows into very small pens and then they fatten them up and they, make them overweight so that we can then, you know, slaughter them, eat them, creates more product. Now, you know, it's going to take some time to transition out to that, according to what he was saying. But the point is that there is a much more sustainable way that we're able to have our cake and eat it too, if you will. You know, our plains are getting completely destroyed from this idea of pesticide movement. There's a great documentary called Kiss the Ground, which goes really deep into this that I know I need to watch again. But what's happening effectively is that the land, excuse me, the land, especially in the Midwest of the America, is losing a lot of its nutrients, and it loses its grass. I think it's called like a grass top. I forget the exact word for it, but essentially it's losing its top level of grass. And so because of this, the ground actually can't pull in CO2 from the atmosphere as much. So, you know, for any climate change activists out there, a huge solution to climate change, to pulling CO2 out of the air and back into the ground, is actually local regenerative farming. So the same people who will sit here and say that, you know, we have a climate change issue, we have too much CO2 in the air, will be the same people who think we need to spray pesticides on our food and on our soil and destroy the ground. It's like, look, all that CO2 is up in the air. Even if tomorrow, say tomorrow we never drove a car again, we shut down every mining operation, whatever, all the CO2 that we've created is still in the air. And the only way to bring that back down is in through the soil. How do you do that? You do these local regenerative farming practices, which is a whole long, deserves a podcast on its own. But you do these local regenerative farming practices that make the soil richer, more nutrient dense. And then we survive because of it. We get to feed our body more. We come to a nutrientized. That's definitely not a word, but maybe we'll make it a word. we become more sustainable, you know, and not just even for our bodies, but for the atmosphere and for the planet as a whole. So those are at least some of the high level and most important things that I think we need to look at as a country. If we want to empower our citizens, we want to empower the world to reach this place of harmony.
Cool. It looks like you have a very deep knowledge into scientific and bio aspect of the health situation and how it works.
Still learning. still learning. But yes.
Yeah. A long way coming from software engineering to broad scale perspective. Do you have a team that helps you to get all these kind of things and researches?
Oh, of course. Yeah, there's a lot of people. I mean, I'm working, this is all I do from when I wake up to go to sleep is all about these research, you know, again, listening to nature, where is it most optimal for me to start learning today? So like a lot of these things I didn't really know about, but I've kind of had like a basic understanding of like, oh, I see how we can get there, or at least I see the future that I want. And so right now, a lot of my research has been understanding what's going on right now. So I had a rancher on to discuss like, look, I don't know exactly what's happening in your field right now. So teach me. I need to learn. Okay, these laws are being passed. Yeah, that sounds bad. Like, tell me as a rancher, because this guy, he's spent 5 to 10 years being a rancher. His family's done it. He has a whole family who's done it. Like getting into politics, I don't know what he needs. I don't understand like his dilemma. But what he's told me, and I don't know how legitimate this is, but it seems legitimate based on the policies that are getting passed, is politicians don't ask the ranchers how to do ranch policy. They instead will just take the money from the largest corporation who's funding their political campaign so that they can get reelected and just pass whatever laws that they want. And, you know, this is another part of the campaign, which is prohibiting lobbyists. And I'm not sure if you know, but lobbyists are essentially people from large corporations who then pay money to politicians to get bills passed in their favor. So we have to prevent that. We need to put in term limits, which will definitely go a long way. And I know, and again, that's something that is just universal. You want to talk about bipartisan agreement? I guarantee you, if you ask any American if they believe in term limits and anti-lobbying, and also I want to add on top of that, it's telling politicians that they can't bet in the stock market. Those three things, if you were to went up to any American citizen, every single one would be like, yes, I agree with this. However, nobody in politics will do it, because this threatens their livelihood of being a politician for life. So, you know, you want to talk about the things that you see in the media aren't actually what the American citizens care about. And so, you know, being able to restore that. And I feel like, hopefully that answered your question. I feel like there was something else in there, but that's at least a general answer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I actually now want to know about how is your spiritual understanding and your spiritual process of opening your consciousness is implemented into your political views. Because everything you said so far, it's quite common sense, how to live healthier, how to do things, and so on. Is there any spiritual aspect that you actually want to bring also? Maybe it's somehow hidden or comes underlined or combined somehow.
You know, at some level, a part of me believes that our politicians are not supposed to be our moral leaders. I think, you know, each individual person has their own relationship with God, with source, with spirit. I think that's very important to acknowledge. And I don't think that I want to necessarily be a strong advocate for it, like within the political sphere. I do my own spiritual stuff on the side. I have people who come to me for meditation and different things, but so I'm there very much also a spiritual leader as much as a politician, but it comes into mixing the two, where I want to keep them separate, because I think everybody's on their own spiritual journey and I want them all to explore it on their own. So we could definitely have a very spiritual conversation if you would like. What I will say at a grand level is that I believe all major religions have a basis in truth. So, you know, for just what I believe, and again, I don't want this to come across as me imposing this on anybody, because I believe we all have our own paths. I don't believe politicians should be in this place of telling people how to live a spiritual life. Me personally, I know that Jesus existed. I know he did the miracles that people claim to him have done. I believe he did even more miracles than what people are even aware of. I also know that Allah of Muslims was a divine incarnation of God. I believe Buddha was a divine incarnation. And I believe Krishna from the Hindu faith. I believe all of them are correct. And I think where the division comes in is of saying that one is right over the other, when it's just a different perspective. So as an example, there was there was a video or picture on Instagram where there was kind of like this cube or like a weird figure hanging in midair, and there was three lights being casted on it. And on the wall in the background, the lights were casting like a star, a square, and a triangle. And I see spirituality and nature as that cube. And all of us are the light and the wall, seeing it from a different angle, from a different perspective. I do see that there's a way, an inclusive way, to bring us all together. But I think this also comes back to what we were talking about with bad programming. I mean, and again, I want to kind of keep these things separate. I don't want to kind of lump these things together. But just at a high level, I see that there is bad programming that goes on within all of these religions that keeps us separate, that keeps us away from each other. And I mean, we could definitely have a spiritual conversation at some point, but the nature of this being political, I would at least want to just keep it more in mind with, I don't think that politicians should be our spiritual leaders, and that, you know, I want to offer that as where my faith is, where my basis is. So, because that's important to people, they care. But I also don't want to impose any of that on anyone. And I think that everyone has a valid perspective that needs to be heard and contributes to the whole. And it contributes to the whole. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think it's more even about how you perceive it. For me, what I discovered also, that whenever a person opens up spiritually, that becomes like a great foothold that comes along no matter what kind of field you're going into as creator to develop. Can you say that spirituality now is actually being your foothold and your main internal drive when it comes to realizing all these things? Because you said you came through a couple of points, like when, for example, you quit your job and you started a whole new thing, and there, of course, I suppose, many fears and kind of things coming up before doing that. Also, when you started to go into politician, the same thing. There would have been many doubts and so on. And spirituality could have been something that you were using as a tool to make it work. Is my connection okay? Or did I stop it?
Sorry, you were kind of... Yeah, it was starting to cut up a little bit there. Are you able to, I'm sure the audience member is going to be hearing that perfectly, but for my sake, could you just repeat that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said that you came through few points in your life where you had to make a brave decision of saying goodbye to the past and coming again into something. Yeah, so the question actually was... maybe it's not supposed to be asked, the question. That's why the connection was broken.
Maybe. I'll let you trust your intuition on that one.
Yes. Actually, you told that at some point your guru, your teacher, told you that you should come into politics. So now, when you being actually like in political party, when you're going with this whole process and bringing these ideas and want to make a change, a positive change, what is your motivation? Do you still see this whole process for yourself personally as a spiritual path? Or perhaps it's all became one for you now? How do you see it?
So I would answer it like this. I think that it's important to note, it wasn't, and maybe it came across this way, but it wasn't just that my guru told me to just, go into politics. It was me having a long conversation with myself of what's the most important thing in the world? What is, you know, there's a Big Sean song in 2015, I believe, that's "One Man Can Change the World." And it sat with me for so long of like, well, if one man can change the world, then why don't we have world peace? And this was like in 2015. And so then, you know, when it comes back to always coming back to my intention of like, okay, like how do I create world peace? Like, because to me, that's the ultimate goal. That should be again, I know everyone has all their own goals and there's a good reason for that. But for me, it's how do we create world peace? How do we have harmony and balance on this earth? Because I look around, we're completely out of balance in so many different ways. And so meeting this, you know, this guru, it was, that was the, my biggest question from him is like, how do I contribute to bringing heaven to earth? Because the way that I was introduced to him was that he's essentially doing that in Mysore, India. He's creating, you know, India has a huge issue with the mafia going in and being, you know, butchering kids and women to make, you know, beggars out of them. So they'll basically force them to become beggars. They'll take their money. And it's like a way that the mafia funds themselves. And so what, through the whole process, you know, talking with my guru and everything, he's doing it himself. At the age of 18, in 6 months, he went into Mysore and made it a beggar-free city. The first city in India that's 99.9% beggar-free. He did all of this by just getting politicians to kind of do their work, to get up off their, you know, butts, if you will, to implement the law, to kick the mafia out. And so moving along, he's doing all of this in India of kind of the things that we're talking about, making food local, making healthcare more affordable, because that's another huge issue is that these areas, capitalism, again, I love capitalism, but it has entered areas that it should not be in, such as our stomachs, such as being healthy, such as our politics. I mean, everyone should agree that politics should not go to the highest bidder. Because we have created a not free market. Like it's so bizarre. Like capitalism is almost eating its own tail by entering politics. Like I believe in free markets, but whenever capitalism has entered politics, it like has destroyed the free market, ironically enough. So I see this same thing happening in our food industry and our medical industry. And to bring it back to the question, right? My goal is heaven on earth. So whenever I pose this to my guru, it was okay. He did, you know, we talked about it for a while and you know, he pointed out like, you know, if you want to do this, you have to have power. You have to have, you know, and it sounds kind of weird and gross coming from a spiritual perspective, but it couldn't be further. It couldn't be more on the money of truth. It's like, you know, it's, I don't want power for the sake of power. I want it for the sake of creating heaven on earth. And so I think just coming back to that intention, if there was someone else out there who was more qualified to be running for the U.S. House representative seat of the 17th District of PA, I would give it all for them. I would do whatever I could to help them get elected. But fact of the matter is, I look around and nobody else is doing it. So I have to. It's almost like there's no other option but for me to do it. So I guess the way I see it is that it's still a part of the path. I see it as being a part of the path for at least until we get peace going, And with that being said, if I see other people who are doing it, I'll throw all my support behind them. I don't want to be the guy who, you know, and there's a very important thing here. There's a difference between need and want, right? I don't want power. I don't want to be in a position of power. It honestly scares me. But if I want to bring peace to earth, then I need power in order to do it. So it's one of those things that, you know, I'm kind of just doing this because nobody else is willing to do it. People are busy. I get that. But, you know, so I see it as just, I'm going to do it as long as there isn't peace on earth. And I'm going to do it as long as there's no one else that's doing it.
Okay. So going back to the topic, I wanted to ask you about the global change and the peace that you see happening in the world. And I also see that this is the next stage of humanity. And it's like, as a creation, we've been broken into little pieces. And the creation separated in order for each piece to become, to gain individuality and learn itself and look at the whole creation through different perspectives to enrich the with that vision, and then to join back together in more perfect way. So the whole creation evolves too, because there is only one reason for us to be here is to constantly evolve and progress, and that's what happens. And we actually reached a point of where egoism reached its highest peak, and there is no place to go further, any further, because it begins to destroy us. I want a bigger piece, you want a bigger piece, we begin to tear it apart, but it's actually our homeland, it's actually, we cannot, what's really sad to see is that there is enough of resources for everyone, for all 8 billion, was it billions?
Yep.
Yeah, billions of people. Yeah, I forgot the word. but we don't use them smartly, and there are still people in poverty, and still people in survival mode, and still people who have lots. And if they only share it, they could have made so many more people happier. But what we see here is, even though we have the right resources, now the issue is the level of perception of people, because there's still this consumerism happening, and lack of understanding that we are actually one and united at the base, or at least from the perspective that we share one planet. It's our common home. We already have something in common, so we have to be nice to each other, you know? Yeah, at this stage, when we begin to come closer into this unity, and that's what life is being pushing us towards, is it even possible for the changes you want to happen without the changes in the state of thinking of people?
No, I think that, well, in order to get these changes, people need to think differently. You can't solve problems from the same consciousness that created them in the first place. So, short answer is no, we do need people to think differently. But it's almost, I see it more as though people want to think this way. People want to see these options that I'm talking about here. Everything from term limits to banning lobbyists to clean regenerative local farming to standing with the innocent people, not taking a side of Israel, Palestine, or Russia, Ukraine. It's the innocent people who are losing their lives, getting displaced. And I think that there's just a level of unawareness that people don't understand how to think that way. Because this was big for me whenever these policies were put in front of me. It took me a second and I was like, oh yeah, all of this makes sense. But these ideas haven't been discussed because there haven't been other people to discuss these ideas. So even just, you know, first of all, this campaign, a huge part of it other than winning is just getting the awareness out there of these ideas to update what, exactly how you put it, the mind. What should we be thinking about? What should we be focusing on? And these are exactly the things we can be focusing on. Because I know there's a narrative out there that the world's already too populated, which is a detestable idea at best. If anyone takes 30 seconds to think about it, it's a very detestable idea. But even to break it down is that we have more than enough room on this planet. It's a small planet, but we have more than enough room. We have more than enough resources to take care of at least, I think we're at like 7.5 billion, and we could probably sustain probably 10 to 11 billion easily. But with that being said, we cannot sustain it with the current model that we have. The model needs to be upgraded. We need to have more farmlands. I mean, I was even just talking to a rancher the other day who was on my podcast. He was telling me how you can turn deserts into grasslands, and we have the intelligence of how to do it. He said it takes some time, it takes a little bit of resources to get it started, but once it's started, it just flourishes. So even anywhere you see desert can be easily turned into, maybe I shouldn't say easily, but there is a process in which it can be turned into a grassland where we can have more soil, more streams. We can return Earth back to its beauty that it once had of being amazing. And, you know, I think that kind of in your question, it also pokes me a little that I think there's also a bad rap in terms of consumerism. I mean, we consume. We're products of nature. Everything in nature consumes at some level. But what your question was highlighting, I think, is the out of alignment with which we consume, because we have more than enough resources for everybody. But the alignment with, let's say, corporations is not in alignment with serving everybody, because people don't make profit off of making people thirsty or making people, you know, full, having people well nourished. They make the current business model is set up to impoverish people because that's when they make money. I mean, look at how many, like right now you have to pay money to get water. I mean, think about it. Like we're creatures of nature. We should be able to go down to our local spring and just drink straight out of the water, which is, if was clean, is very possible. And there's a place in, I know in India where it's completely unpolluted, this area, because it's seen as like a sacred water fountain, and people can just drink straight from it. It's just naturally arising water that just
through the byproduct of hydrogen and oxygen. I'm not sure exactly the scientific process that occurs underneath the ocean or how the water gets there, but it's some of the most enriching and clean water that exists on planet Earth. And so, big picture, the goal is to return to that model. How do we return to that model? All of the stuff that I've been kind of laying out here, and it's very possible, but to answer the question that you came in here with is yes, we need to update our thinking. And I don't think, and again, it's not the fault of the individual for not knowing it. It's just that these ideas haven't been put forth. And I think once these ideas get more traction, more people start learning about them. They start seeing the numbers financially, how it's possible, economically, fiscally, how these things are possible, then it's going to have more of a, it'll take roots. Because I know initially, I know there will be resistance, which any idea should have resistance. And I welcome it because we need to challenge new ideas. But the more you dive into this, the more I dive into it, the more I start realizing like how possible it is. And not even just how possible, but how quickly, once we start seeing this, people are jumping on it. Because at first people just don't even know or aren't sure. But once you start giving them the data and the numbers, people are just like, whoa, like I didn't realize this was happening. This all makes sense. Let's do it. So I'm very excited for just getting these ideas out in every way possible.
Let's imagine, let's dream a little bit. So everything you want to make came through, the project's been launched, and now it's a long-term perspective, and there are more now lands being nourished, there's fresh water available, people have access to good food, so their basic needs, they are covered, so to say, they're healthy in their body. Do you see that it still fixes the issue of psychological problems? So let's say we have the next layer for me, when it happens, I have physical body ready. The next thing is comes to relationship in between people. It comes to my wholesomeness and how I perceive myself and so on, so on. And to the ability not to be involved into stream of constant mental tension that is created. And nowadays we see such a huge flow of information coming to us all the time, nonstop, and brain actually not being able to process it. In fact, we only like take 5% of that information, and it's not the fact that it's useful at all for us because we're overloaded, and the psych system keeps on processing it all when we go to sleep, and it continues and so on. And therefore, people live in that very kind of stressed state from which, even though if they have food or even they have some fresh water, it will already increase the level of health and release some stress. Yet this mental pressure that exists, no matter what, is still there and perhaps quite often forces people to act reactively, to go back to old patterns, to old habits, to think in old way, to harm each other, trying to protect, yeah, and consider still this world kind of dangerous environment. That's where egoism has to stand up and protect, because that's what it's for, created for, to protect in this dangerous world. So coming with this, do you see any level of awareness that you want to spread on that level, or something that could be influenced in the roots of how we think and how we perceive each other, how we treat each other? Maybe this is something that you have also in your campaign.
Not specifically in my campaign. And maybe this touches on, I guess, a little bit more of a spiritual / forward thinking model. I suppose the key word in what you were saying was kind of relation. So relation to yourself, relation to a partner, but more importantly, relation to nature. And I think that we don't realize how, like, just how disconnected we truly are from nature. I mean, even look at this podcast, right? I'm completely surrounded by lights, a computer, electromagnetic frequency of my Wi-Fi, my phone sitting beside me. I'm, you know, sitting on a chair, you know, there's no real tangible nature. I mean, there's not real like grass or soil that I'm connecting to right now at this moment. And think about the person's average day, right? Let's go back when people were going into the office. You're wearing shoes, you get in your car, you're maybe outside for 30 seconds to get from your house to your car. You're outside for another 30 seconds to get from your car to your office door. You go in, you sit in your office. Maybe if you go somewhere else for lunch, maybe you're lucky to go to a different place. Sometimes people don't even get outside in order to have lunch. So let's say it's another 30 seconds to a minute. Then you go back to your office. Then you come back into your car, another 30 seconds. Then you go from your car to your house, another 30 seconds. So big picture, you know, the average person is only outside for maybe 10 minutes. And don't quote me on that. Maybe someone has actual statistics on that. I'd be happy to look at that. But let's just say the model person is only in the average, what we say working class, is only in nature for a handful of minutes out of the day. So whenever it comes back to these things of like trauma and stress and feeling like we're out of alignment, it's like, yeah, I mean, there are relationships get hindered. That you like, how can you even have a functioning, you know, let's say romantic relationship if you don't have a functioning relationship with yourself or with Mother Nature, the one who gave birth to all of us? So through this process, through these policies moving forward, I believe that it'll just be something that kind of naturally occurs. I think that, you know, we'll see a time whenever we don't really even think about or talk about trauma, if you will, because we'll be so in tune with nature that maybe this is me being a little too optimistic, but I think we'll just be in a place of so much peace and gratitude for finally being reconnected with our mother, if you will, with our souls, that we're not going to have these traumas. We'll have so much more confidence in who we are. We will be more in tune with the natural order of things, such that we don't really get too uptight if someone calls us a bad name. But see, even think about where that energy comes from, right? That comes from a place of being disconnected from who you are. So I don't think there will be people who even call you bad names, because it won't even cross their mind, because they're going to be thriving so much in their own life that they won't need to go out of their way to make someone else feel worse. So maybe that seems a little bit too much like a utopia. And I guess I don't mean to say that there still won't be struggle. Like, you'll still have to do things in order to survive. You'll just enjoy doing those things. Because right now I see it so much. And even with myself, there's times you do things you don't want to do, but you know you need to do them. What if we could find a way to enjoy doing those things? And I find that that's very possible, but our bodies are out of alignment. We're not connected with our bodies. We're not connected with the soil. We're not connected with the earth. And we can't even have a personal connection to nature. So it's going to ruin all other connections that we have to any other people, because it's just so disharmonious that it's going to create everything else disharmonious from that. So, you know, speaking of roots, I think that this is really getting to the root cause, which is connecting back to our roots, connecting back to nature, so that we can thrive moving forward with all of our other relationships.
That's very interesting, because if you look at nature and sun in particular, it's in the process of constant giving. So like service. You've been talking about furniture around you, but the whole space around us has that kind of service. The chair is supporting my body right now. The floor is supporting the chair. The table is supporting the microphone. The clothes is serving my body. And there's like coming back to nature, it's also in the way of thinking of being input into this world. Like, for example, even people being able to support a good idea or good party or good stream, good project, that's already input with mental energy, that's already a part of service. It's all about intention. Where is it coming from? And I believe that the more people will start giving unconditionally, they will recognize that they don't lose anything when they give. They actually begin to feel the nature which they are, which they felt the disconnection from. And that's what actually brings the source of happiness. But we need a live example. Because, you know, you can place a kid into jungle and the kid will learn how to act like animals. Or you can, exactly in the same way, kids pick up role model from parents and from society, from school, so on, so on, so on. So it's about environment and about good vision leaders standing up and connecting people that have similar thinking. So I guess that's what's happening right now.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you said it beautifully, you know, and probably the thing that's coming to me when you're talking about supporting is people don't act in service because they don't think it's going to come back to them. There's a fear that if I spend this hour on a podcast with you, that I'm not going to get the return of it. There's a fear of if I, you know, spend X dollars on something, I'm not going to get that value from it. If I give someone some money, I'm not going to get it back. So, you know, this does come back to fear. And where's fear? It's in the root chakra. Why do we have that? Well, it's to protect us. So we're in a state of survival. Why are we in a state of survival? Oh, because we're not getting nutrients into our body. Oh, why are we not getting nutrients into our body? Oh, the government policies mandate that you have to spray chemicals all over our food. So, you know, you can see how fear of just even helping other people can be changed from a policy level. But, you know, again, it takes a little bit of thinking and a little bit of diving into the research and the data and a little bit of courage, because I know that there's probably a lot of fear, going back to it, of even just spiritual people getting involved in politics at all, because they think maybe, I don't know, maybe they're not worthy. They think that they're in the program that spiritual people don't get involved in politics, which again has been a great masquerade, if you will. It's been a great program to keep those in charge who should not be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people scared of influence and power, but influence and power can be not something that ego wants, but can be a tool to make a positive change. And yeah,
absolutely.
If you have the intention and pure intention to make a positive change, you're the person
that's the thing.
That have those tools coming.
Yeah. And that's a good point. It's always coming back to intention. What is your intention? Why are you doing what you're doing? And that's really, anytime I found a hard place or I've gotten to something I don't want to do, like most recently I started doing door-to-door campaigning, and you know, there's a lot of fear that comes up with that. And I'm like, wait, I'm doing this to bring peace to the world. Okay, cool. We're going to take that intention and just run with it. It gives you so much power. Like, it's just so empowering to realize like, oh, I'm doing this to bring peace to our earth. Oh, okay, I have to do this then. Now going door-to-door seems like no big deal. So it's really a powerful thing.
But you know what? I actually want to give you a perspective of how I see your political path being your spiritual path. If
sure,
you
please do.
If you don't mind.
I think we're running close on time, but I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. You know, there is this thing about that it's always about trusting life and stepping into unknown, which makes you overcome the limitation of fear to discover who you truly are. And what is the way to actually uncover it? It's not through sitting in the cave for 15 years, which perhaps worked for people 1,000 years ago. Nowadays, it's actually coming out of limitations and social barriers and with good intention, and each time makes step before the ground appears underneath your foot and seeing that life is ready to support you on your arms. And each time this step perhaps is even more challenging and requires even more aspiration and that vector to your main life goal. But that's what activates your highest subtle body of aspiration, the flame body, which has this highest aspiration to make the positive change in the world. And that's what begins to activate all other subtle bodies too. So when you do it, it actually like creates the whole process running for you internally.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely noticed that taking that next step, because, you know, it's daunting. I mean, right now my entire campaign is self-funded, and I keep asking myself like, well, how's this going to get done? How's that going to get done? But the more that I just keep taking that next step, nature meets me halfway and is like, okay, we'll support you. Like, it's like that question of like, are you actually going to do it? Like it's almost like it's kind of interesting you bring it up, because it seems like it's almost like a back and forth conversation with nature where, you know, you need to do, this is the act of karma that Hindus talk about. Like, you need to do, we have actions we have to take forth, and you need to do them, you know, without expecting rewards. But what I've noticed is the more that I do in alignment with nature, the more it's like, oh, okay, it'll do for me as well. So there's a very interesting play that kind of is occurring there.
Yeah. So did I get it right that right now you find you fund your whole campaign yourself? Fund. Yeah.
Yeah, currently 100% self-funded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll have donations sometime in the future, but right now there's other things I need to focus on before setting up a bank account and going through all those legal processes. So currently they're doing that. Self-funding and being funded by nature.
And seeing how life supports your good intention.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Having a strong intention.
Yeah. Okay. So at the end, I would like to ask you what you think about Paradontocity that I develop right now also as a project. It's also the way to make a difference in the world, which we do. So basically, what we do right now, we unite people that have this aspiration to higher self, to reveal it and to live in it fully, and that actively ready to change themselves together through the methodology that allows to do so, but also building a place that allows to accumulate that kind of people and create a studying process there so that people can come there and change themselves, change their vision, and then bring that vision, just like you do through politics, anywhere they go, into their families, into like education, into food service, anywhere. But the main thing and the main idea is that it's about example of healthy society that once reaches concentration enough will launch a global process of consciousness arising also, and launching people awakening that we're not planning to awaken even in this time, and this happening because of the mental field opening up and releasing tension of that psych accumulated tension in the sphere with the light that's coming through the people that are conducting it freely, consciously, and that's being service. And then creating more and more spots like this all over the globe as a spiritual centers that allow for the light to shine through brighter. So how do you, what are your ideas on that?
What are my ideas on that?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think in principle it sounds great. I did a little bit of research. It looks like you guys are doing a great job. A lot of people have given you guys solid reviews. It's certainly important. It's certainly important for people to reconnect with who they are. And I think you alluded to, it seems like there's a human consciousness, right, where we're all connected at some level. Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm all for it. I'm not sure. I don't really have much to add to it. I mean, at a high level, I would agree with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this whole global process and even us meeting as a general thing is another jigsaw puzzles coming together, just serving the world from different perspectives, but at the end doing the same kind of thing.
Oh, for sure.
Making a positive difference. And I wanted also to share a gift for our audience that are listening to us tonight, today, this morning, whenever they're going to listen to it. Yeah, that's a free course that allows to develop practical skills on how to be more self-aware and how to actually learn to shift from thinking to looking at life through the heart and making those brave choices when fears limit us to come out of comfort zone on the way to our happiness and to our dream. And actually this course is very practical and revealing some laws of new time that appearing right now and that we have as a humans applicable to us, especially for spiritually mature people. The requirements are higher, I need to say that. For sure. So everyone who is watching us and feels like it resonates, feel free to go and follow the link that will be placed below to grab the gift of this course made of 6 not long lessons.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so at this stage, I wanted to ask you last thing. What would be the message you would like to leave after our conversation, after this podcast, to people that will listen to it?
Just enjoy life. It's so short, and we become a very worked up about small things. So try to enjoy everything the best you can, because I know that if you look throughout history, there's many times where people create from a place of anger and hatred because there's something corrupt or evil in the world. And they're probably right in that there is that evil and corruption. But when they create from a place of hate, it doesn't create anything better. I mean, I know a classic example would be something like Hitler, where he was very angry with what happened after World War I, and rightfully so. There was a lot of issues that were going on in Germany, but he was still angry whenever he created. And so he ended up killing millions of more people because of that anger. So I know there's a lot of injustice that's going on in the world, and I know hearing me speak today probably worked up a lot of emotions, but the art in being spiritual, one of the arts, is finding a way to still just enjoy the moment, even with all of the evil that is present in the world today. And so that way you can create from peace and joy, as opposed to being sucked in and creating more evil.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Anna. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, great questions, a beautiful interview, and I'm super grateful that I've spent the time with you. If you ever find yourself in Pittsburgh, you'll have to come, and I'll show you around.
Sure, no problem. If you ever come around Eastern Europe countries, all welcome.
soon, looking forward to it.
Yeah, thank you so much for this time, and goodbye to our audience.
Beautiful.